Welcome to Conversations of the Strange.
Conversations of the Strange.
Hello, everybody, and it has been a very, very, very long time. I want to welcome you back to the Conversations of the Strange. I am Don Smith, your host, and this is just a very unique time going on in not just in our country, but in the world, and there is a lot happening, and I thought it was time to dust back off the headphones, and I wanted to reach out to someone that has become one of my dearest friends. And just an all-around wonderful writer. And we are fortunate enough to have her. We're doing a massive return after a three-month hiatus from the Conversations of the Strange. And I am on the phone with my good friend, Linda Zimmerman. Linda, how are you tonight?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
Linda, I've got to ask something. I sat down and did a little figuring out of some stuff. Right now, you have three podcasts. One of them totals about 24 hours worth of material. Another averages about 13 hours of material. And the second one averages maybe about pushing 2 hours of material. And you sit down and you see your name associated on Amazon.com for the amount of books that you have out there, whether it be your Ghost Investigator series, your HVZA series, your history books, your nonfiction books, such as your Bad Science books. And I could only imagine the literal millions of words that you have written. So when you put all of this together, my first question that I've got to ask you is, when did you know the coronavirus was going to happen, quarantining people to stay at home? And then did you immediately just sit down and start working?
Well, I think like everyone else, the coronavirus took us by surprise. I am just stunned at the response and the amount of things that are shut down. It's just surreal and not anything I thought I would see in my lifetime.
Right. I say that facetiously just because, like, I was just sitting there just going, I go, wow, if there was ever a time to be stuck at home with
right.
little to do and a lot to read, then you know what? Linda is going to help us through this.
Yeah, I never have little to do. So this isn't a big inconvenience for me because, you know, as a writer, you necessarily are by yourself doing what you do for long periods of time. So.
Right, but I mean. For the average other person that is not you, you have given people plenty to do. So basically, it's kind of like, you know what? I've got my Linda Zimmerman situation here. Whoops. Tired of the ghost investigating. Let me jump over to UFO hunting for a while. Whoops. A little bit bored with UFO hunting. Let's talk astronomy for a while. Whoops. Enough of that. Let's go into some Rockland County history. You know what?
Yeah,
I want something.
No excuse. I have a full quarantine worth of material for people to read and listen to.
Exactly. Actually, you know what? Maybe since we are talking about it, do you mind if we kind of shift the focus a little bit? Because I do want to talk about your brand new podcast, Science Friction Theater, which is absolutely fantastic, and I have enjoyed the last few episodes. But I do want to ask, and it's honestly because of the amount of science that you put into HVZA, the Hudson Valley Zombie Apocalypse, and the difference has been versus every other zombie movie you've ever seen. There's always some sort of deus ex machina that creates a zombie. The Walking Dead. I mean, the thing that's been known about The Walking Dead is, it hasn't exactly said what created the zombies. The zombies just kind of, like, the sheriff falls asleep and he wakes up, and then all of a sudden everybody's zombies. And George Romero, it just said the dead just came back walking around. And they're like, and then like some of the other things, like you'll hear like magic, some sort of radiation, asteroid crashes, some sort of experiment gone wrong. You actually sat down and you borrowed a lot of stuff that happened from the Japanese nuclear disaster at Fukushima, and you had that as the catalyst for the zombies that appear, and you actually went into the science of it. I used that
disaster as the possible trigger point for mutating actual I don't want to give away what it is, but organisms that can do certain things to the body and have been known to go along nervous systems, get into the brain. And so I quote actual papers in there, in the books. I actually read a lot of scientific papers because, yes, granted, we're still talking about, people turning into brain-eating zombies, but I wanted to put as much realism, because a lot of these, I love the original zombie thing, even though they don't explain it, Night of the Living Dead scared the hell out of me when I was a kid.
Right.
And then we got this series of different zombie shows and movies, and it's like so far from any sort of reality, and it loses me. For me, the more realistic something is, the scarier it is. So I tried to put as much science and, as I said, realism into what was happening as possible. And, for the feedback I've gotten, I hope I did that.
Gotcha. Now, let me, first of all, just remind everybody, you are a trained chemist, am I correct?
Yeah, I worked at a medical diagnostics company. I was in the R&D, research and development lab, for many years, and I had the lab coat and the instruments and all of that. Did that for quite a while, so definitely have a science trained background and career before I switched to writing.
Right. So it's like, again, you've got a very different perspective on this stuff, that like when you hear like the president is coming out now on a daily basis and talking to people and saying, hey, this is what's going on, this is what we're doing. And then he's also on Twitter flat out mentioning certain type of drugs that are working to combat this in certain areas. I guess my big questions are, obviously this is something that we should be taking seriously, but is this something that we should be afraid of? Like, let me put it, the example. If you've got someone that is walking on a broken ankle and not getting it treated, is that what we're dealing with? Or are we dealing with somebody that's had a massive coronary heart attack, call 911 immediately? Like, what should our approach be with dealing with this?
Well, the science, I'm not an expert in virology, but the science of this shows that the vast majority of people get over this. It's that vulnerable part of the population that those of us less susceptible still have to follow the rules and, social distancing and all that to protect the vulnerable people. You can't, you see these kids on spring break. Are they all going to go home and give it to their grandparents or the elderly neighbor next door? I mean, like this, it's an unseen enemy, and it could be on a surface. It could be, when you shake hands, you don't know. So you have to be overcautious to protect that group who are going to succumb to it. So I just want people to look at the science of this, not this fear-mongering panic that's you know, making all the toilet paper disappear from the shelves. I mean, it's just crazy, but, you know, I just posted something today. So many people have been getting in touch with me that they're like, wow, this is how it all starts in your zombie novels in the Hudson Valley. You know, the panic, the fear buying, the testing centers springing up. You know, you see a parking lot filled with people in hazmat suits, you know, testing people for this potentially deadly virus, and it definitely hits home. So these are strange times for sure.
Right, right. I'll tell you one thing, just as an aside. I think my favorite meme that I have seen so far is basically it was a picture of a news broadcaster who's dressed like. He's dressed like one of the guys that came into Elliot's bedroom when they were finding E.T., and they're all in their, like, space quarantine suits.
Right,
he's standing there holding up the microphone with the masks and everything on. And then there's a second picture of his cameraman and him, and the cameraman just has on a coat and a hat. And he's so it's just – that's just typical for the news media where they want to ramp everything up. Like, honestly,
absolutely.
I think the best thing that the news media that would happen to the news media was if there was a zombie apocalypse breakout, because then they'd be like, woohoo, panic ratings, this is great.
Absolutely. So it's, you know, we're both historians, and we see how even, you know, 100 years ago or more, people wanted to sell newspapers. So the more sensationalized they could make their stories, or make up their stories, as we've also seen, the better. So, yeah, the media is, you know, they're not a non-profit organization.
Right.
You know, the different media outlets. So take it with a grain of salt, but listen to the science. Listen to the doctors who are giving us the facts. And let's hope we all stay safe.
Right, exactly. But in the meantime, this is why I was saying, like, this is why it almost reminded me of a guy with a broken ankle that hasn't gotten it treated. Yes, take it seriously, but it's not life-threatening, if that makes sense. Go get it taken care of before it becomes gangrenous is essentially what my thinking was. And kick back, relax, and don't take – and just relax. That's basically what it boils down to, because if we keep telling ourselves, oh, my gosh, this is the end of the world as we know it, and we don't feel fine, then bad things are going to happen. And I think that that's – and it's ultimately like what you said. It's going to lead to the toilet paper panic. What this is going to be called, the toilet paper panic of 2020 or something like that. So – but anyway, in the meantime, if you are going to be scared of something, might I encourage people to be scared of something that they listen to and something that terrifies them the way horror movies did, the way that you talked about how Night of the Living Dead scared you as a little girl. And that's part of the fun of what you've been putting into science fiction theater. Don Smith, master of the transition. Here we go.
Yes. Obviously, I was very heavily influenced by horror movies. Love the science fiction movies of the, you know, any black and white science fiction movie I'm a big fan of. You know, the rubber-suited monsters, all of that. And plus, you know me, I have a very hard time being serious for any length of time. So I'm trying to do kind of serious but yet spoofs of these classic horror science fiction things. And I have been having such a blast of, you know, as you've mentioned, I've done, a dozen different things, I think. I figured out I've lectured on over two dozen completely different topics over the years. So I have very varied interests. I am having the time of my life writing and performing these scripts.
This stuff, like, what's funny is that it's almost like there's a level of, you're watching a movie on Mystery Science Theater or Riff Tracks, and the riffer is in the movie itself, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. It's, you have to listen to understand, but give you an example. The very first one, Atomic Robots from Mars. I mean, I was trying to think, what's the most ridiculous thing? And this actually started as a short story idea, maybe 15 years ago, never went anywhere with it. And then the other podcasts I do on Hudson River Radio, I was speaking to the station owner, Brian Horowitz, and I said, how do you feel about doing some sort of old-time radio show ourselves? And he was all over it. And the hosts of all the other different podcasts on the station read the parts, and we just have a blast. It's like we're all a bunch of little kids, you know, hey, let's go put on a show. And they've just done such a great job, you know, reading the different parts. And I try to put the real scare and tension, like, dun-dun-dun, you know, what will
right.
happen next. But then the absurdity of it, and part of the absurdity, it all takes place, every episode takes place in Stony Point, New York, where the radio station, the Hudson River Radio, is. It all takes place in 1954, and ultimately, in every episode, Stony Point gets destroyed.
That's great. Why Stony? Why Stony Point? Is that where you're originally from, or?
No, that is where the radio station broadcasts from. So
oh,
that's
nice.
Where the studio is. So I thought, in deference to the studio, I'm going to destroy the town it's in every week. And of course, the next episode, you know, everything's back to normal, and you know, nobody remember. You know, it's not like a continuation. It's just the absurdity of, okay, here we are with the next disaster, and I'm trying to draw upon, you know, the robots and mutated creatures, and of course, one of them is the Beast from the Darkest Realm, because I was a huge Godzilla fan. You know, so we have the gamut of things destroying the town.
Well, I imagine that part of the fun of this is that you could make something as scientifically, like, you can make something that's like just straight, when I say science fiction, like, this is crazy science going, like, science is going crazy and crazy things are happening, and where you deal with, like, a some sort of homicidal hookman guy all the way to something paranormal, where it's like, oh, like Night of the Ghosts or something, or anything like that, where it's just kind of like, it's almost as if, like, you've brought back one of those EC comic books that every issue had a different thing, where it's like, yeah, you can have that gothic castle with that unusual being that lives inside it as your protagonist, or you could have the Spider Queen from Mars or something like
that.
Oh,
you've read my mind. I do have a spider one coming up. I'm about halfway through the script on that. But yeah, I've run the gamut of the evil German scientist, which of course I play in the in the episode, to demon clowns from hell, I believe was the third episode.
Yes.
So yeah, so we get there's no limits on the absurdity and the villain and the horrific ways that the town will be destroyed. And back to the German scientist, I have to say I'm like a kid in a candy store getting to do all these ridiculous accents. There's the episode, The Beast from the Darkest Realm. I play a Scottish paleontologist.
Oh, nice.
And the Scottish accent is so outrageous, but I had a blast doing it. But my whole career, I've been myself. I'm lecturing on topics that I've researched. Here I'm playing a role for the first time.
That's hilarious.
As silly as it is, and I am enjoying this more than anything I've written or done in I don't know how long. It's crazy, and I love it.
It sounds like you're able to kind of turn this around. One of the things, like, I want to jump back a moment ago. We were talking about how you have a science background and how you are a chemist. One of the things that was completely interesting was, I believe it was in the first episode, you played the role of somebody's
nuclear
assistant.
Physicist.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
I'm a graduate student getting my PhD in nuclear physics.
Right, right. And it's kind of like the joke of it is that everybody is looking at the smartest person in the room and saying, go get us coffee.
Right.
With her.
Right, because she's a woman, which if you watch these early 1950s or mid-1950s science fiction shows, there's always the woman making the sandwiches and coffee while the men solve the, you know. Just watched Creature from the Black Lagoon again yesterday, and the woman is a very talented scientist, but her job is to basically scream. Right? You know, that's her job in the movie, look gorgeous and scream. So, yeah, she is the smartest person in the entire episode, but she's a woman, so hey, take notes from me. Give me some more coffee, and that was the way of the world in the 1950s.
Right. That issue aside, and obviously, that can all be discussed. But the thing that I find more fascinating than all of that is when you hear the graduate student that's played by you talk. She starts rattling off papers and lectures and books like you wouldn't believe. It's kind of like the same stuff, like whenever you're watching Star Trek and somebody's going, well, what we have to do is we have to bypass the conduit of that, and it just starts.
Right, when she starts talking about observing the beta decays and you know, things like that, all of that is absolutely true science.
Right, exactly. So once again, in the same way that your HVZ, like your science background, popped up in HVZA, that you were able to do all the papers and research, same thing pops up here with this,
yes.
And that's what I find absolutely fascinating is that it's sort of like, hey, you know what? For you parents that are stuck at home with your kids, and you want Linda's show is educational.
in a sick, twisted way, but I appreciate you caught that. There is real science mentioned in there, which just again adds to the absurdity because you know she is obviously brilliant, has all of this knowledge, but nobody asks her opinion. You know, she finally has to blurt it out, much to the horror, you know, of the men, like, what is this woman talking about? So, yeah, women are, throughout the episodes, are treated very poorly, you know, as sex symbols and menial jobs. And one of the episodes, I play a woman who's graduated tops in my class in law school and can't get a job because she shows up for an interview and they're like, well, we can't hire you. You're a woman. And that's exactly, yeah, I read up on women who went to law school and tried to get jobs. And it was, they were basically laughed out of offices, out of law firms, because we can't have a woman lawyer. So, you know, I put in a lot of little things in there. But I don't want it to sound like I'm too serious or preachy. I mean, we still have death and destruction on massive scales. enough to keep everybody more than amused for half an hour.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if anybody knows me and knows the stuff that I am into, they know that I am not a fan of things that have gotten preachy, such as what happened to the beloved series I call Doctor Who, and the dumpster fire of trimester abortions that it currently is. So they know that I'm not into that type of stuff. So I am into your story. So yes, you throw the digs in there and everything, and with good reason. And it's not done in your face like, see, this is how it was back then, and you should be ashamed. No, it's, yeah, this is how it was, and I'm going to make fun of it. I'm going to make fun of it.
Exactly. That was life back then, and, but the main goal is to get people to laugh and have that old-time thrill of, you know, families used to sit around the radio and listen. And I remember there was a show that I listened to just a couple of years ago. It was an older time radio show. I think it was called Lights Out. And they told you, before you listen, put the lights out. And, you know, I always would. And there's something magical about listening to a show like that. It lets your imagination go, and I just love this as, I don't want to say an art form, that's making it sound too grandiose, as a form of entertainment.
I was actually going to say, it is a different type of medium, because I was going to ask, because in the United States, long before the television, or actually after the television took over, there were no more of these, the shadow knows type of things. And yet in England, it's still as viable of an art form as anything. Like another prime example is Big Finish, the guys that do all the Doctor Who audio adventures, where they bring back the former doctors to let them play the doctor again and have their own sort of audio adventures. It's still very much an art form that is used. Like, it's kind of like, oh yeah, I spent some time doing these Big Finish audio adventures, and did some audio work for BBC One or something like that, and now I'm going to go play in Othello, and then after that I may pop up on whatever legal drama is currently popping up on BBC or something like that. It was sort of like, this is what you did. And I wanted to ask if you had any thoughts as to why in the United States it hasn't done as well as, or it's kind of like, it's still, it's sort of like the way drive-in movies are today. They're out there, you can find them, but they're not the norm, if that makes sense.
Right. No, I love drive-in movies. That's where I saw a lot of these bad science fiction movies that influenced me. But today, I'm not sure. I mean, we're so into video content, and even, music videos. I remember when that started becoming a big thing, and you didn't just sit and listen to your song anymore. You had to see the music video. You needed the visual content of it. And we're just, I think, we love our movies and TV shows. We love our visuals. And I just think it's going to happen more, because how many people now are listening to podcasts? I mean, there's a million different podcasts out there, and they're finding, oh, on the way to work, I can listen to a, you know, half hour, hour podcast, and so it's coming around, but I don't know how many people are doing little fictionalized plays or readings like that. So I'm hoping, you know, word will spread and people will say, oh my God, this is so stupid and fun, and you know, what a great way to pass a half an hour on, you know, maybe they'll laugh on the way home from work or the way to work or something. So that's my goal. I just want people to have fun with it. And
right.
And
it's a great escape. I've listened to the first three episodes. Forgive me, I didn't see if the fourth one was out yet.
That just debuted on Monday, a week ago. Well, it should be up there as a podcast now. And as we are speaking now, the next one should be tomorrow. So by the time people are hearing this, there should be five that are currently up. Due to the coronavirus, we have three other scripts ready to go, but we don't want to gather a bunch of us into the studio for at least another week or two. So,
right.
But everybody should be able to catch up, and by the time they're listening to this, there should be five episodes up there and a variety of ridiculous accents that I put on, and some of the other people who they're just doing such good jobs reading their parts. It's like now when I'm writing a script, their voices are in my head, and there was one character. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, so you know, like, oh, I'm writing this, and I can completely see that Jim's going to do this, or I can completely see Brian playing the role of this little boy or something.
Right, right. There's one of the characters, if you've listened to it, there's a newspaper man, Dutch Dillon.
Oh, and, yeah, yeah.
Yes, the deer who has a very funny show of his own with the Deer and Dez show. He read Dutch Dillon, and I loved it so much, I've written another Dutch Dillon script. And Dez played the nuclear physicist in Atomic Robots. He was so spot on with the absurdity of his role. I'm writing another one where I'm sticking the nuclear physicist back in it, just so he can reprise that role. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, I'm just letting these scripts go wherever they go, and now that we've got a few under our belts, I can see the talents of these different people, and I just love being able to create, you know, recreate the roles and keep these things going.
Let me ask, when you're writing a script, and because this is one of the things, because I've done some audio stuff myself, And I think you and I have chatted about this. I would think that one of the biggest problems with writing an audio script is, like, for example, the robots, giant robots from Mars. Like, how much description you're putting in? Because, like, if, like, you and I were, like, hanging out at a diner together and a giant robot came and started shooting up things, you and I would both be looking at each other, and we would be both looking up going, what in the world is that? And, oh, gosh, we better run. But whereas, like, in audio scripts, you'll hear a lot of people go, oh, my goodness, look at the size of that giant robot. It looks just like, what is that thing coming out of the top of his head? Oh, no, it's glowing red. We better run away. It's like, it's yeah. Not stuff that normal people would say. How much do you put into, like, do you put that stuff in on purpose, or do you kind of watch out how you do that?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and always when I write, I try to be visual, you know, but this is different. Now you're going for the sound of it. How are people going to listen, and how's that going to inspire their imagination? So I put in little things like, oh, it's an 8-foot-tall robot with a glowing red, you know, like you said, death ray or something like that. But I don't put in a lot because I don't want to dictate to these people where their imaginations should go. Mm-hmm. I want every single person who listens to these episodes to just go in their own little fantasy worlds and create their own atomic robots in their head. So you do absolutely need some of it. You can't completely leave the listener on their own, but you just give them a little trail of breadcrumbs to, you know, and I'm learning more as I'm doing this. And then, of course, there's the sound effects that a sound effect is worth 1,000 words.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, it's, and I was just so pleased that Brian Horowitz has been the one putting, editing all these recordings together and putting in the sound effects. And I've just been so pleased with what he's done to create that little bridge between, you know, between dialogue, you know, footsteps on the stairs, a creaking screen door, you know, shots fired with a whatever.
Yeah.
Those are those great little bridges to take you in even deeper into the story.
One of the things that I do think works well with that sort of narration is you actually have a narrator. So it's not – so like, again, you and I were talking and going, oh, my goodness, look at the size of that 8-foot-tall robot with the glowing red eyes. You have the – and at that moment, he looked up and he saw an 8-foot-tall robot with glowing red eyes. Quick, Jen, we've got to run. Totally, because
yeah.
that's how you and frankly, as a writer, that I find completely, there's something weirdly satisfying about that, because it doesn't go into that, oh my goodness, look at that 8-foot-tall thing that looks just like a garbage can with legs and your mother's head on top of it. it looks straightforward. Jumping back to how you were describing the 8-foot-tall robot, when I saw it in my head, did you ever see the old Max Fleischer Superman cartoons from way, way back in the day? Did you ever watch any of those?
I probably have, but I not soon enough, you know, not recently enough to remember them.
Okay, gotcha. Because the reason why I say that is when you had in your episode about the robots, that's what the type of robot I saw in my head. And I'm wondering, would you consider that you have done something well if I'm thinking of that as the robot, and say some younger person who was like born in the 90s and grew up post-Terminator is imagining something that looks like a Terminator walking around?
I am thrilled by that, because that's exactly what I'm going for. Put enough in there that the listener then uses their frame of references or their experiences, or that's great. Picture what works for you, and that's the beast from the darkest realm. I don't say, oh, he looked like Godzilla or whatever. I just say it's a prehistoric beast, and there's a running joke that will be through episodes where I describe him as half dinosaur, half amphibian, and half reptile, something like that. Well, that's 150%, so hopefully people catch that. And I'm doing that in another one where it's half this, half that, and half this. So, yeah, picture, you want to picture Godzilla? That's great. You want to picture a massive creature from the Black Lagoon meets Godzilla? You picture whatever, you know,
yeah,
you want to with that. But yeah, the narrator, big kudos to Neil Richter, our narrator. I created the narrator because I knew his voice would be perfect for that 50s style science fiction type show. And yes, you're absolutely right. Having a narrator frees you up from making the characters sound too ridiculous. Because like you said, you're running for your life. You're not going to stop and say, well, oh no, the creature has grabbed me around the abdomen and is clamping its jaws on my head. No, you're going to scream, and it's up to the narrator, you know, to fill in what's happening.
Right, right, exactly. And slowly, John grips on, oh no, this giant amphibian reptile dinosaur thing that is 150% monster has grabbed hold of me. So, well, before we wind down, I wanted to ask if you could talk a little bit about your other podcast. You're working. You have two other podcasts, one dedicated to the UFOs and one dedicated to murder in the Hudson Valley. The question that you probably get all the time is, how do you choose the topics? And this is a massive shift, and I'm just going to basically say that in Murder in the Hudson Valley, the criteria is you find, well, a murder that has occurred in the Hudson Valley region of New York that kind of extends to like the northern parts of Bergen County all the way to parts just right on the verge of New York City and right pushing the Catskill area. Am I correct
right,
on that?
Right, right. Yeah, that whole area. And what I really look for, since my co-host, Mike Warden, is an actual police officer, sergeant, with detective experience and really a great legal background. He really knows the law. What we look for is, a murder that has some pretty spectacular details generally. Following the discovery of the body to the police, what they have, you know, their investigation, leading to an arrest, and then all of the legal wranglings that go on. So those are the criteria of an interesting, mysterious murder, the apprehension of the suspect or suspects, then, you know, as guilty as they are, what happens in the courtroom? And Mike really brings a lot to the table. Well, in every aspect, particularly the detective work and, you know, the legal. That if you've listened to the show, you've heard me so many times say, well, you know, the lawyer invoked such and such a law. What the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, what does it mean that they brought this charge? And then Mike, you know, describes it. So we try, and then often the aftermath. Did the person ever get out of jail? Were they, you know, executed? Did they die in prison? So, it's not. We do cover cold cases at the beginning of each show.
Yeah, in fact, that's actually the next thing I wanted to ask you about. When you do the cold cases, there is, I got to tell you, one of the things that I don't know, unless you're an outsider listening to this, and I got to tell you, I binge listen to Murder in the Hudson Valley. I will let entire months go by, and I don't listen to it, so I can listen to it in boom, 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 boom,
oh,
boom.
Great.
Because it's, I got to tell you, the most annoying thing is, that's it? And that's all the episodes? It's like, you know what, no, I'm going to go to Hudson Valley and shoot somebody just so I can get another podcast.
Another podcast. Please don't do that. Yeah, that is not the point of our show. but yeah, the cold cases, I didn't do that initially, but so many cases were coming up that were unsolved, and it wouldn't make for an entire show, a lot of them, but some of them needed to. And then there were some that I remembered that, you know, really bothered me when I was younger and come to realize they're still unsolved. So it's, you know, I kind of do it as, I don't know, what would you call it, like a public service thing.
Yeah, public service.
Yeah, let's throw this back out there. If there's people, you know, these thousands of people listening, maybe someone is the one who has the clue to solving that. And wouldn't that just be amazing if one of these families could be given some closure, or at least some answers if someone comes forward? So, you know, I've spoken to detectives, I searched the state police, has a cold case page, I'm always looking for articles. And please, if, you know, people have gotten in touch with me and said, look, we love your show, did you know our sister is missing or something, or did you know about this case? So I'd love to have people get in touch with us to suggest cold cases to bring up, because,
Right. I was going to ask, though, are you, do you find yourself turning this, like the next evolution of this? Because this is what I was trying to say, was when you listen to all of these shows in one spad, you start hearing a little bit of a passion, like a passion that you had for justice, like what would have been a little amount. The next episode, it's just a little bit more, and then a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a little bit more, that I almost wonder if you guys have talked about any sort of victim advocacy project or something like that. Because I got to tell you, there are just some times where you're just like, can you believe the jerk that did this, and the jerk lawyers, and the jerk defense attorneys, and the jerk prosecutor who basically... Like, he had the smoking gun right there, and and it's just kind of like, you know what, I'll get in there, and I'll give the guy a headlock. Like, you're basically saying what another person listening to this would be saying as well. And I wondered, have you given any thought for a project like that? Like, the prime example is, and I'm going to, real quick, I want to do a shout out for Michael J. Warden, who is an absolute gentleman of a human being, and his website, michaeljwarden.com, has a list of all of his books, and I'm gonna have his link in there as well in the show notes when we put this out there. But he is such a nice guy and worth your time, and his stuff is amazing. He's got ghost books, and he's got true crime, and he's got some really amazing history stuff as well, and he's really, really entertaining too, and he's a darn good writer and a nice guy. Just don't ask him about spiders. But the thing is, inside joke. But the thing is that his stuff is really good. But I remember it was the case of the 7-year-old girl from Fort Lee that was murdered, and they put her body. The guy that it was like her next door neighbor put her body in Hudson Valley, and that's how it became
that's the one, the teacher who she was, yes, like the Girl Scout,
yes, yes,
yeah, and, yeah, from Jersey, and put her body in a
in like a crevice or something. I thought it was like he like wedged her in between some rocks,
yeah,
and that
right,
and that same story appeared in John Douglas, criminal profiler, John Douglas's book, Sitting Across the Table from Demons or something like that, Sitting Across from the Devil, I forget, but look it up, put Across the Table, John Douglas, and you'll see an excellent book that is worth your time. And his story is featured in that. And when I heard you listen to that, I almost, like, talk about that case, you were like, I'm ready to do something myself about this. Like, let's do everything we can to keep this guy in jail so he doesn't come out anytime soon.
Well, yeah. So, you know, I have thought about that, but I think the best platform for us right now is the show, because all these people are listening to it, and there was a case where the girl who was brutally raped and murdered in Pearl River, you know, where I grew up, one of the guys was going to be let out of jail. So, you know, I went to there was a big rally in the town I went to. I interviewed people, put that in the show, and put some things on my Facebook page, encourage people to call their lawmakers, call Albany, call Cuomo. Just make a nuisance of yourself and say, no, it is not acceptable someone can do this to a human being and then walk free. So I did really take that a couple of extra steps. Will I do more in the future? Yeah, possibly. But I think right now the best thing for me when these cases really upset me is to just bring them to the audience, and there's power in numbers. You know, you have 10,000 people calling their senator, saying, or their governor, whoever, saying, this is not justice, this is not what we the people want to see in our society.
Now, let me say this, though, regarding the cold cases. I would think that at best, you guys doing the cold case is you would trigger something that would at least lead to a fresh set of eyes on the investigation. And at worst, you've at least given another platform and a reminder and given the family of whoever this poor victim was just a reminder that, hey, we haven't forgotten about you or your family. Hang in there.
I've gotten some really wonderful messages from family members of cold cases. I have literally been brought to tears on numerous occasions. People thanking me that, you know, wow, we were just blown away that you took the time to mention our daughter or our friend or whatever. And that's just an amazing feeling that you can sit in front of a microphone in a studio and maybe bring a little encouragement. Or, you know, are we going to solve any of these? I don't know. But if the family member and friends, like you said, at least realize somebody cares. And I do. I mean, hopefully you can hear it in these shows. I genuinely care about these. I want these people to be brought to justice. I want these family and friends to get some sort of closure, because, you know, we say it all the time, for the victim, it's over. It's whatever it was horrific, they're gone. The families live with this every day the rest of their lives, particularly if they constantly have to fight to keep the perpetrator in prison. The yearly or every other year parole hearings, the fear that these people are going to get out someday and do this to someone else. For the victim's family and friends, the horror never stops.
Right. It was interesting. One of the things that was Brian had co-hosted. Brian Hurwitz, is that his name?
Horowitz.
Okay. He was the co-host on the Attic murder, and that was the story, for people that didn't know, of a heroin addict who murdered his mother and father, and his mother and father were immigration lawyer. Was the father an immigration lawyer? Yeah, okay,
They were both immigration lawyers.
Okay, gotcha. And he, at the very end of it, brought up a fascinating point that because of the son killing the father, then how many people's immigration hearings and information to come into the United States were delayed because of this guy's reactions, because of this guy's actions. And you're saying one little person just turned into this huge, it wasn't just like, I'm going to kill my mom and dad, and the worst thing that you're dealing with is grandma sad she lost her daughter, brother sad he lost his mom and dad. No, you're dealing with everybody is affected by this.
Yeah, that was a great point that he brought up. And you know, that's the other thing we always say. It's like, you know, when you drop a rock in a pond, the ripples that go out, the number of people that are affected in so many ways, whether it's personally, professionally. That was an excellent point. You know, when a doctor is murdered, how many people would he have saved or helped? You know, whatever walk of life you're from, you're so intertwined with so many people, and the loss of you as a person, how many people does that affect for how long? So, yeah, I'm, you know, some people say, oh, you got to give everybody a second chance. I've heard people say that. I'm like, really? Do I really need to give, you know, someone who raped and murdered a seven-year-old girl? Does that person deserve a second chance? Do serial killers deserve a second chance? I don't think so.
Yeah. It's just more sad than anything. Well, speaking of how one person's life can affect a lot of people's lives, I'm going to flat out tell you, as was said at the beginning of our interview, you have written so much, you've recorded so many hours of wonderful, wonderful, whether it be informative or entertaining, you pretty much have integrated yourself into a lot of people's lives, not just in the Linda Zimmerman projects, but in the interviews you have done and in the TV shows you have popped up. So basically all one has to do is just Google Linda Zimmerman and pretty much watch everything with you in it, read everything that you've ever written, and before you know it, it'll be, well, November and the coronavirus will be gone. So
we can only hope.
So, Linda,
hopefully plenty more episodes to come by then.
Gotcha. Linda, I can't even begin to thank you so much for your time tonight, and thank you for allowing me to just kind of jump all over the place with your career, because God knows you've written all over the place in your career.
I'm all over the place. I can't help myself. Well, thank you for giving me a platform to talk about some of my projects, and really, I love talking about science fiction theater. And please, people, you know, I don't actually, you know, often like, hey, please listen to it and give me some feedback. And if you have suggestions for crazy other episodes, I'm having fun doing it, and hopefully that comes across. And we all could use a laugh nowadays.
That we could. Personally, what I would love to see is you basically dramatizing some of the characters that you've created.
Will probably eventually happen, yes.
Yeah, where we get to see, what was the name of that very awesome lady in Dead Center?
Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah, because Dead Center is a great book. It's probably one of my favorites of yours. And also we get our friends Bex from Hudson Valley, Zombie Apocalypse. I'd love to see her pop up. And also in the wonderful, wonderful comic book series, the Ghost Investigator Adventures that are from Pinion Comics.
Can't get any better than that.
No, not at all. Not at all. And that were co-written by a very good-looking man. I would love to see all of them pop up. LZ would be a great comic character to see come to life. So anyway, Linda, I can't even begin to thank you very much for your time, and it has just been my absolute pleasure, and I'm so glad we had a chance to talk.
Thank you.
Everybody, I want to say thank you so much for listening. It's great to be back, and we will be doing more interviews very soon. We will try and get this up regularly so that we can get because I know you listeners would love it. And like I said, we just have had a lot going on a personal level. And thank you so much for listening, and I do hope you have a great day. Take care. Bye.